I would like to welcome you to my talk. And I decided to speak this year at CPPCon about my experience in writing a larger application with modern C++, C++ 11, etc. Qt, and I also use Boost. And modern C++ is for me a bit of a synonym of Boost and new standards. But more to that later. And yeah, quick introduction about me. In 2012, I started Meaning C++, which is today my main job as a C++ evangelist, and hence you might know me from social media, other talks I've given, or the Meeting C++ conference, which I organize in Berlin each year, and which is kind of the counterpart in Europe to this conference. And previously, I've been working as a C++ freelancer, and also have some background in the telecommunications industry, and first learned in C++ in 98. And I'm also a big fan of user groups, and this is a very important part of the Meeting C++ project. Every dot here on this map is a user group that has been at least active since 2012, and most are still active. And say about 75% at least are like connected to Meeting C++ and related to that. And I regularly try to help them to get new members and keep running. But actually, about user groups and community, there's tomorrow in the lunch session. If you're interested in that, please come there. Today, the topic is a different one. I wrote CMS in C++, but it's for static websites, so it does not have anything to do with servers or anything in that direction. And the other goals I had with this project from the start was I just wanted to see how far can I use modern C++ in combination with Qt and older libraries, and to which extent I would have to use Boost, and to which extent I would be able to use the newer standards. And I also found out that I don't want to focus on the code as the like focusing on like what did I need for writing the CMS, because that would give a lot of people the wrong focus on the talk, and some people probably would be not like expecting the wrong thing from the talk. And I'm more in my interest to share my thoughts on the project and the experience I learned and the techniques I used. Because I think it's probably more useful than so many people are probably not writing a CMS in C++. As I previously said, modern C++ is the focus and patterns to connect this with Qt. And in August, I did over my Twitter, I do every then and now a survey, as Twitter is now able to do that, and I asked, what is modern C++, what is that? And a lot of people have a different opinion, and you saw the keynote this morning, the modern C++ frame is very different. It does not mean the same for everyone. And so there's the book from Alexandrescu, which is called Modern C++ Design. Then there's the new book, and a lot of people which are just came to C++ and know Scott Myers, They think that this book defined this term, or that Scott Myers defined the term. Some people think it's the new standards, and for me, the new standards are not necessarily modern C++. For me, the new standards are just C++. That's what that is kind of what some people call the new C++. Boost is for some people not modern C++, and for some people it is. And I kind of have sometimes is it a buzzword, you know? And so what I found out is it really, really largely depends on your audience and who you're talking to. If you're at C++ now, of course, Boost is modern C++. If you're talking to a lot of people today, thinking that the new standards replace Boost, so they think that modern C++ is not anymore part of Boost, or is getting out of Boost. And on the other hand, in my opinion, what I want from C++ is I want to use the right tools for the right job, and just to use the standard which I currently have on the compiler I use for the fullest. And as some of you probably know, it's not always the new standard which you have with your current compiler. So, and on the other hand, I was asking myself, where did this term modern C++ originate from? And so I contacted Andre, who wrote the first book, which basically used that term. And because I thought, maybe he knows more about that. And he says, yes. So in his understanding, and Scott Myers agrees with that, he, Radek Sandrescu, coined that term. And for him, it means the term refers to a template-intensive generic style of writing code. So if you want to have a definition of modern C++, this is the one valid definition, kind of, okay? So, and as I previously said, it's the term today is kind of difficult to use, as it can mean a lot of things for people. And so you really have to know your audience well if you you know, communicate with your coworkers. Do they understand the same thing under modern C++ than the other team? And so on the other hand, from my point of view, how I want to use C++, I want to write less code. I like templates because, unlike object-oriented code, they are usually better reusable, and you can have smaller parts of templates just handling one job, and you can reuse that somewhere else. One big thing which is currently coming with Variant and other things is just the whole topic of static polymorphism. And as I mentioned, the C++ standard is always depending on what platform you're currently using, what compiler you are able to use on your job. And on the other hand, part of this code is of this talk is also Qt, and I use Qt heavily. And so on the design principles and how Qt uses the APIs and build the APIs, there was last year at my conference a very good keynote by Lars Knoll. So if you really want the full session on that, that's 90 minutes, like just the design principles of Qt. Qt is built very much after the impression of using C++ like Java, like, you know, C++ with classes. That's why I kind of also kind of like to bash it as the JDK of C++. And it has a heavy focus on usability, on not exposing like modern C++ to the user, but it's just a different style, in my opinion. It's very interesting. If you really want to understand all of C++, you have to understand how people use this style to really build great and important applications, whereas Qt really is not like MFC, a part of the past. It's still there and it's still thriving, and the community is really there, and Qt is growing, and they actually, with the next version of Qt, they have speak recognition in C++ available as a technology preview. So there's a lot of features in Qt available and still coming, which are interesting for you. And I also decided to show you a quick screenshot. This is a Qt program. So I have a tree, I have several widgets which just display data. And basically, if you double click on an item in the tree, you get to open one of those widgets in the tab control. And in this tree item, also in this tree view, also lives a context menu, which will have some role later. And just to have a quick overview on my application, I have two layers, one for Qt, one for standard C++ and Boost. For a simple reason, while working for years with Qt, and on the other hand also being exposed to a lot of ideas coming from Boost and visiting C++ Now since 2012 every year, I kind of got to feel this framework lock-in which you have as Qt. If you have a Qt program, you usually already have a solution which isn't Qt available. So you don't necessarily need to use the standard or need to use Boost. And on the other hand, I see my profession as being a C++ developer, not as being a Qt developer. So that's why I decided I want to have two layers, like Qt only for the UI mainly, and the other layer in standard C++ and Boost. This is also a separation of licenses. The UI part I could only license as LGPL or GPL, and the other part I could turn into a library, and make it basically available as a boost license, which is for some people preferable. And so I might do that later. But currently the project is far from that, and I'm gonna come back to the project every now and then in the talk. And one thing I start noticing as a community manager, there's a lot of tension in the community and the opinion what to use, and Boost is, in my opinion, still useful. A lot of features are there which are usable, which are not in the standard, and C++ 17 features and 14 features and library features which are in other standards probably coming are already available in Boost. And on the other hand, these dependencies often bring the need to use in your code which you're writing the dependencies to Boost, especially Boost bind and Boost function. And on the other hand, the standard. The libraries from Boost are not copied in the standard. They are reviewed by a committee, and usually the standard does not depend on Boost. So the dependencies are replaced, and this means that some part of the standard might not offer all features which a Boost library offers, because a Boost library might have some interaction with another Boost library which is not in the standard, and hence this part is removed. Or I hear this like, yeah, but we don't need Boost anymore, we don't have this dependency, and we don't have this build dependency anymore. But actually, you know, the most features which are currently in the standard from Boost are header-only libraries. So you don't need to build them anyways. And on the other hand, you have the disadvantage that, of course, the platform you're using needs to have this part of C++ already in support. I'd like to present a little bit of the code I use to connect mainly Qt, or to write templates which I use with Qt. And I had to write like code which is like living in the standard layer, and then gets mirrored into the Qt layer, which is, for example, the tree and the factory. Those are like completely written in a style that they're independent from Qt, but they're used in Qt then in the code in the UI. And I had also to find some solutions to transfer the data out of qubits. So as I saw, I have this tree, and this tree lives in the tree view, and this tree actually contains the document which I work on, or the website I work on. And this tree has a very simple setup. So I decided against having a classical tree with object orientation, where you have like a base class with a tree node, and then you derive like a directory or a page node for like having a website. I decided to use Boost variant. And I also had one important thing, which is mandatory from Qt. I have to have a pointer which is stable in memory. And if I don't have that, Qt will at some point access a pointer which is not anymore valid, and then the fun ends. So I decided to use a shared pointer here and derive the class from enabled shared from this. And that is, of course, also because I wanted to be able to have the option to go from one node to the parent. So I have this weak pointer pointing to its parent, and of course like a vector of item t, which is basically the pointer to this object for the children. And I mentioned when you double click on the tree somewhere, I needed a factory because I wanted to then to I have a certain ID, and this ID is basically a type. It's a hash type. Like type ID and hash gets the hash code, gives you the size T hash in this case. And for this factory, I thought I years ago had seen that Boost actually has something for factories. It's a small library. It gives you a callable object which will create just, you know, like a factory an object. And so I was able to use this, but I wanted to wrap this into like my own class, because the Boost factory library only presents you this callable, but it does not have any facilities to like build a factory, like for example in modern C++ design was described. So I need to have a flat map which goes from the type I want to the callable which actually creates a type. And then I have to register that. And here again, we have this dependency to Boost function I mentioned. So with Boost function in this case, you use Boost bind, plug in the Boost factory, and then you just have to add the arguments to the factory. And when this is called and create, you just see the arguments are a template, a variadic template, and the arguments are then just forwarded into this call of the Boost factory object. In theory, you are able to use std function here, because you can put an std function object in a Boost function object. And I tested this years ago, and it worked. And I thought, well, this is a great interoperable. You know, it's like you can use that. And it's, but then STL saw this code, because I was like, yeah. And if you really need to use a std function, you can put it in a Boost function, and it works. And STL saw this code, and he's like, yeah, it works, but it's like a really bad idea. So you shouldn't do that. So maybe you can, you know, use some wizardry to replace this with a type which uses std function in a better way. But currently, I don't mix std function and Boost function in my code. And then I used a very similar pattern to create a context menu, or a class which basically handles context menus for me. Because I have one, and I currently don't have the option to reuse this anywhere except there. But if I need a context menu in the future, I could just use this template. And so Qt sees a menu as a list of Qt action pointers. That is why we have now a map, which is again a flat map of a hash type, which is a size T in this case. And a queue list of this, which is basically then the menu for Qt. And in the code which displays this menu, I have to call the exec method from QMenu, and the menu is displayed, and it returns the result of the call to this menu. If the user selects something, you get a pointer to this queue action object, and if the user just clicks somewhere else and makes a menu go away, this pointer is null. And hence we have to check this pointer for null, and if it's not null, QAction, the class QAction is able to hold a QVariant, and a QVariant is actually kind of like an any. And hence I can put anything in there as the kind of the handler. And so I use a bit this data method from Qt, and have again a Boost function in here, which is the signature for the handler, which is basically, this is a lambda now called. In the real code, I just hand over a lambda or use boost bind to bind this to some method. And you can use std forward if you call a boost function without problems. And then I had also one decision I had to make is how to get the data which is edited in a form back into my model, because all the data at the end lives in this model which is far away from Qt. So I have to often load the data, which is not a big problem, but I also have to decide how do I set up my code that I'm able to to transfer the changes back into my model. And I did not want to add for each simple text box I have a handler which handles some weird event, and this is like for each queue widget, it can be different. And this would require to write a lot of boilerplate code or to have generated a lot of boilerplate code by Qt. I decided to go a different route. And for that, I needed to be able to extract basically the value out of a queue widget. And the part where I see this queue widget, then it's a queue object pointer. This is why we don't have a queue widget, and here is an argument, we have a queue object. This is the reason. And then the upper code shows basically how I handle this. There is a queue object cast, which casts this control to the actual type, and then I just extract the value. And one of the reasons I have to write this code is the painful way queue widgets store their data. Qt wants to be very usable, and that's great. But queue widget itself does not have like an interface to get the value of that widget, which is like generic or like a virtual function, like a value function, which probably could just return a queue variant, and then you would have the data wrapped in this queue variant, and in some other place you would know which is, if that is a string, a bool, or an int, and you could return it again to some value or visit it. So I have to kind of write all those methods, and this was a little bit of boilerplate code, but once it's done, it works. The next step was I had to decide when do I extract the data, and I decided every time a widget loses the focus, I make sure that I transfer the data back to the actual model, which is in some parts a little bit of an overhead, but on the other part, I just have one event which is in every widget, and I have to just to install this, which is the next slide, and then this is basically the filter class, which has a callable. We check if the type which we actually want to filter on is the current type which is present. And in this case, I have two callables. One is a setter, and one is a getter, which gets the actual object pointer, which in this case, as I mentioned, is just an queue object, but actually a queue widget in this case. And then, so the traditional way in object-oriented APIs like Qt is you derive a class, you specialize a virtual function, and then you do that again for everything else, for every use case you have. And since we have now like callable objects, and I have used boost function for some years before we had lambda in the language of C++ 11. So I actually kind of used to have like a callable instead of that as a pattern. So I need to write some event filter class, because this has to be a concrete class, because queue objects cannot be templates. And again, we have a callable, which we just saw the filter class, which is basically wrapped that. And then in the event filter, I handle this, and I just have to use this interface if I ever need to have an event filter again. And in the widget itself has a method called install event filter, and there I just have to give that widget then an instance of this class with the setter and with the getter options set in the other object. So this is kind of a very, very, you know, many layers of things which are getting called, but it works. And so this is how I decided to do that, and so far I have not found a better method to do it. And yeah, for many code bases where you have to override certain classes to just satisfy a certain thing, you can use a pattern to have one class which is generic, and if you don't have to have it as a queue object, you can make it a template, which again gives you more freedom, in my opinion, for reusability. And this in this part, this is just the class which has two hairs, which is just acting as the event filter. It's not reusable for everything else. And this brings me to one of the features which got me started in thinking about writing a CMS is that I thought that some clever people were able to run TinyMCE as a text editor inside Qt with QWebKit. And I thought, wow, this is great. And then I figured out that this code wasn't like perfect. I had basically to implement this myself. It was like a 1-weekend hack, and then it worked. And yeah, so I write the CMS for websites, and I have to be able to edit HTML in a WYSIWYG edit or something somehow. I currently use in my own application TinyMCE for my website, and so I wanted to continue using this. And in this year, I wrote the import for my blog posts, and I was very happy to try out if I could edit my blog posts in the class I wrote as the editor. And I figured out that the longer blog posts didn't display. It was some kind of timeout or something. It just was too big and didn't run. And yeah, QWebKit is kind of old, and it's an older version of WebKit itself where it's based on. So with Qt 5.7, there's a new version which is based on Blink and has a pure async API. And so I started porting this class to the QWeb engine in the last weeks. As I kind of figured out that I have to go to a different engine to be able to keep using this approach to edit my websites. Yeah, and previously I had figured out like, is this a working HTML editor? And yeah, this is last year when I showed this, and this is how it looks. This basically is just in the application. And yeah, TinyMCE 4 did not run back then. It might run in the Q web engine. I haven't tried that for a different reason. And so yeah, this year I found out a few other things. So Q WebKit is deprecated, shouldn't use it anymore. You need to port to Q web engine. And actually I like MingW. That's my compiler bean for years. And with Qt 5.6, they now even have the 5.3 GCC branch there. So I'm able to use a lot more C++ 14, and it makes me happy. But on the other hand, I found out that the QWeb engine under Windows is only available in the Visual Studio 2015 part. So I had to see how to get this running. And there is this new great feature in Visual C++ that they have actually a tool, a build tool only. So you can get the whole tool chain, but you don't get Visual Studio. So this installs a lot faster, it's a lot lighter, and I can use it together with Qt Creator. And as I mentioned, it's asynchronous only, the API from the QWeb engine. And the reason why it's only in Visual Studio available is that Blink itself, where it's based on, that's basically the engine Chrome uses, is only available to build with Visual Studio 2015 under Windows. And yeah. And currently, I really would like to try that out and give you a little bit more information about using this. But for some other reason, where we are soon going to see, my code currently does not build with Visual Studio, because I have a different dependency and this library doesn't build. And so I either have a broken application where I cannot edit my blog posts, or I have an application which doesn't compile. That's the current situation. And on the other hand, in the part which does not use Qt, I had the situation that I needed something for file system access, because until then, all the file system access I needed, I always had Qt. I always could, how you do it, like an application, you select a file, or you need to load a file, or you need to see if a directory exists, and then it's so easy just to use Qt. You're not gonna build boost file system and see that everything is linking and working to check if a directory exists. So But on the other hand, file system isn't the standard now, and so I wanted to see if I can, you know, get around this and just work with Boost file system, where I also know that from a lot of my friends from C++ now that people have been using it for years and it's actually pretty well working. So this example is when I built the CMS, I also had to make some decisions how to handle some data for CMS, like JavaScript files, image files, or CSS files. And I decided just to handle that as a string of a file, because actually like a path. For the same reason, there are already like enough editors out there, and I don't want to integrate in my UI an editor for JavaScript, etc. Writing one editor for HTML or like hacking that together that it works is enough, and I don't have the ability to get another editor running there for currently, and I just I can edit those files somewhere else, and that's how basically how things run. And so this you might already have figured out this is basically the function which loads one directory every file into a flat set. And for this, you need to have you can use a range for loop, which is then running on a recursive directory iterator. And you need to have this recursive directory iterator, because otherwise you only get the files in the current directory, but not in the directories below. And also, yeah, in file system, there's many cool features. You can, like, of course, create directories, and then you have this feature to work with this weird overload of the slash operator. And then it's very easy to work with that. And when, once you get used to that, you really start missing that when you work in another context, again, with some other libraries in a directory context. Also, you can like test if a directory exists or a file exists. In this case, I use this to see if the data file, which actually contains the data in from the project, exists or not, and then I can load this from Boost serialization. And until now, mainly the code I presented is from last year. So now we are getting into things I've done this year, and one thing I really wanted to check out is Boost Hash. This is the second reason I started the project, because I saw a talk about this at C++ Now last year from Michael Kass, and Boost Hash is an implementation of a text generator which uses a Moose hash format. And from the feedback I had from Michael, and Michael also presented last year the library here at CppCon, but that wasn't parallel to my talk, so I saw him later and asked him about the progress. And yeah, so the goal basically is to have any type working, and you can then just transfer any type in this text template. And it's kind of, the goal is to be a stable mustache implementation, which is almost true. And yeah, you can take a wild guess. Boost Hash is the reason I currently cannot build the application, because with Windows Visual Studio there's a build error. And I talked to the Microsoft Boost because of that, and maybe we can solve it. That would be really good. But then also, I began to research Moose Hash, and I wanted to know, is there anything, you know, Michael tells me, or also in his talks, there's kind of this slide which almost says like any type, and I feel challenged by that. And so I was looking like, is there any type which is not supported, and is there any weakness in Moose Hash in the format itself? And so I figured out, I might not have to use vector bool to test that, but vector itself is a nice example. And so Moose Hash is widely built on the dictionary idea that everything has a name, and the name then has a value. So I asked him if vector is supported, and Michael had previously already shown examples where he used vectors. So of course, Michael said yes. And then I asked him what the name of the vector itself is, and he first didn't understand that, and then I asked him, I have a vector of string, and of course, you know, yeah, a vector of int, etc. would be the same. So Moose Hash itself, and if you look that up on Google, you find dozens of threads with Moose Hash and array, or Moose Hash and string, that Mustache itself is not really able to, many implementations are not able to actually work with something which is index-based. And on the other hand, arrays and vector are kind of popular in C++, so that's something which I definitely want to have supported. And at the end, Michael did some research, and actually Mustache, in the actual Mustache definition, there is something for this, but it's just usually not implemented in the implementations. And so in the dev branch, Michael has implemented this, and there's like a special syntax for that, and then you can also work on anything, any type that is like has an index operator now. And this is currently in the dev branch. And on the other hand, on the same, I was C++, and Spring, I had the problem that I had still had to use C++ 14. I wasn't able to use that, and Mustache was built on C++ 14. And so I had to use C++ 11 and backported the library. So in my GitHub repository, you find an implementation of that running with C++ 11, but that was before Michael implemented the support for vector, which I currently don't need, but it's probably nice to have. And later I tried to build with Visual Studio a few weeks ago and found out that there is a build error. And but with Visual Studio 2015, once this build error is resolved, I'm probably able to use the dev branch anymore then. And then I finally can move on from C++ 14 in this field into that. And yeah, so this is basically how I generate the HTML for the website over Mustache. That's basically the whole goal of this, to be able to generate the code, or basically, no, not the code, the HTML for the website. And I previously mentioned that I imported my blog posts, because it's like one of my goals that I want to keep the content of the website. And I decided to use JSON for that. So I had also in mind, one feature I'm currently implementing is something like a data store. So for my website, there's like a catalog-like feature where you have a list of speakers or a list of talks. And you just want to have like one site which like is able to display this as a list, like a table, and then you have another page which like is displaying the items, like one speaker, one talk, and these are the two things I'm trying to solve with JSON currently as a data format. The data store uses JSON as the storage format on disk, and the import kind of imports the JSON, which is exported from MySQL into a certain JSON format. And previously, I've always used Qt for JSON, and this is the layer where I don't want to use Qt, so I have to see what libraries can I use. And there's actually, I was looking like, has anybody written anything about that previously, like an overview? And so I found a benchmark, which also is pretty practical to see, like, you know, which libraries do we actually perform? And then I, of course, you know, got the question which one to pick. And so, yeah, I actually cannot answer this. I looked at so many libraries, but I decided that maybe I'm able to write like a little library which just forwards my calls into what I need from JSON into a generic code, so I can reuse this. And on the other hand, the criteria to you know how your use case is, for me it's API and usability is more important than speed, and for other people it's the other way around. And then on the other hand, I wanted to have like my own API a little bit, for the reason that when I want to change the library, I don't want to refactor like all my code. And like in 2 years, I found out, well, this library which I use is like really good, but it's not anymore maintained. And maybe I want to change this to a library which uses C++ 17 or something. And for that reason, I thought maybe I'm able to have like a layer in between which just exposes its own API to my code and then just uses the other library. So in that case, I would just have to exchange the library. So, and I had this idea because there's a library that does this for XML. It's called Arabica. And I have never used it, but I've met some people which do, and it's actually kind of an interesting approach. Arabica lets you like use different libraries on different platforms for XML, and hence you can always use the fastest library, and or you just can use different libraries for different approaches. Like if you have in one place you need speed, and the other place you might need some other feature which is in one library not existing. And on the other hand, I wanted to be able to use this with Boost Fusion and HANA. HANA is upcoming. I currently don't use HANA, but Fusion is good. And HANA is, it's not like based on Fusion, but it's based on the ideas from Fusion, MPL, etc. So this is an important point for me. And so let's use the import as an example. I need to be able to have a mapping from the JSON itself to the member names, because I have like some weird UI where I import this and I want to be able to say this is the JSON field and this is the data field where I import this. And so I have some weird string which is the name of this field in my type, and I can generate this member name with Boost Fusion. Then I need to traverse the JSON data and have some sort of visitor which is able to call for the right field with the right value, this code to say here this member name from JSON goes into this field. And yeah, this is kind of, you know, something which you usually solve with reflection, which of course, you know, is so greatly supported in C++ that we again have to fall back to Boost Fusion to use this. And yeah, so I have one class which is called list entry, because technically I keep all my block entries like in one list like structure, and so I need to use Boost Fusion adapt ADT here, because I use setters and my variables are not public, they're private. And then I need to hack a little bit of Boost Fusion, because unlike the Boost Fusion adapt struct, Boost Fusion adapt ADT does not feature this ADT member name. And so I need to kind of emulate this. And so every time I have to use a type in this, I have to write this boilerplate code, which is a little bit annoying. But on the other hand, I have to do this once and then I can use this. And yeah, as I said, I have to define this for each type in this ADT Boost Fusion macro. And then I defined this macro, which basically emulates what the macro from Boost Fusion in this case is not doing. And then I have to call this for every member in the extension namespace from Boost Fusion. And this is then essentially used in a struct called set value, which iterates over the fields from a Boost Fusion vector. And essentially this is the members of this class then. And in the background you have some weird proxy ongoing from Boost Fusion, which then calls the setter and the getter when you call it, when you assign to this. And yeah, so this is basically what the set field method which I just had in one of the previous slides. So the sequence is the type itself, the name and the value are what I want to assign. And then in the if I have to see, at compile time, this generates a code and I see each time I'm in this member, and this is the name of the member, which is this Fusion extract struct member. And then I have to call an assign method because I cannot really assign it here. This would get a compile time error because this method is compiled and generated for each member, and those members can have different type, and then it can say, well, I cannot call this with this type. That's why you have to have an assign method to actually do the work of the assignment. And then the correct overload of assign is called if the types are matching. And in the other way, the set value is called again in recursion with the type, the name, and the value. And yeah, now I just need to be able to reverse our JSON struct and get this code in a certain way running. And so most JSON libs have no idea that a tree, or you know, basically their tree, is like traversable. And RapidJSON has a handler, a visitor, which you just can write to visit certain fields in the JSON structure. And every other JSON library is like, no, that's something they don't know, and you have to write that your own. You have to write your own code to iterate over this, and they don't have this traversal mechanism implemented. And hence, I had to implement that myself, and had to, you know, as I said, I want this generic layer between my code as kind of a firewall. When I want to be able to use a different library, I want to be able to switch, and easily without getting a lot of work in refactoring. So I had this weird idea. What if I'm able to find a trait for has member? And turns out Boost has that. So Boost can tell me if a certain type has a certain method. And hence I'm able to use enable if to kind of switch on and off methods. And so I can write multiple methods which like use internally, like the needed interface of the library which I want to use with this, and then at compile time magically the write method is like, you know, enabled with enable if, and the rest is just ignored by the compiler. And it turns out that you also can do this with the auto return type deduction when you use decal type, and then you can just write there T type, and this will now this method will only be used if this T type is actually there. And the last that's also important, the last member in this list has always to be the return type. This is then a method which returns void, and you also like bool int is possible. That's all the types are supported there. And this is how this looks in the actual code. You just this is actually an early example. Mostly you have this enable if, and I use a lot of the Boost library now there to do that, to have that in a different context, better working. And if you use enable if, you often have that in the return type. And then I had to decide which JSON libraries I want to support. And I had kind of to do a code review on most of them. And yeah, this doesn't fit on a slide. There's a lot of JSON libraries, and I use currently RapidJSON, which is one of the better ones. And I do like that, but I have seen a lot of other things. So if you use an external JSON library, you really have to have a code review on it. And on the other hand, RapidJSON is really built for speed, but it's also kind of an API, which is, it's an older library. It's not modern C++. It's kind of feels like a little bit like an alien in the code you use. And on the other hand, then there probably some of you want to know like about modern JSON, which is also a very popular JSON library, which uses modern C++. And for a long time, I thought that's a great library. But then I figured out that the get method from modern JSON returns a copy of the object, and that there is a get ref method if you want to have a reference. And I find that a very bad style, because a get method is like almost every library has that in the JSON field, and then it returns a reference usually. So people might expect a get method returning a reference, and so you might get a lot of unneeded copies if you use this library and are not aware about this. And on the other hand, there's a lot of libraries using object orientation or enums for representing the JSON value itself. The standard type for having an object is a map or a class for that, and arrays are usually std vectors or a class for that. And in my own framework for generic JSON, I have had to implement a JSON value, of course, which reflects that. I had to write my own JSON traverser for all those libraries which do not support this. Then I had to implement a JSON visitor template to enable this and to make it usable for my own purposes. And of course, some method which turns a string which comes from somewhere into this JSON value. And the status of this is that it's a prototype. I want to refactor this and get it out in a library of its own, though I can put it on GitHub and people can take a look at it. But for myself, I found that I have a lack of time and I have a lack of use case, because I use now RapidJSON and I have the API kind of working. And if I need to switch to a different library in the future, I could just start working again on this code, and I have other needs to actually get the CMS working. So this is currently kind of dormant, and I probably will put the library itself on GitHub so people can take a look at it. Also, feedback from C++ Now made me a little bit not sure if this is the right approach to do with the enable ifs, and this code is kind of finicky, and does it really compile with everything, and is it really the right way to do it? It's that's an interesting discussion and thoughts. Which brings me to the conclusion and goals. As I said, I wanted to just to share my experiences for how I used modern C++ and how I combine it with Boost and Qt, and show you some of those approaches. And on the way to that, I had the pleasure to meet most JSON libraries, which is probably also interesting for a lot of you. And Boost Tash has been last year a topic here. And so I started using this, and it's actually a neat little library, but it needs, I think, a little bit more support from potential users. And as I said, currently it's not compiling with Visual Studio 2015, unfortunately, but we might get this resolved at the conference. That would be really cool. And on the other hand, as I'm exposed to a lot of C++ and the community, I start noticing C++ changes currently. We have the C++ 11, certain things came which are for a lot of people new, like tuples. And I guess, the part of the audience which is really liking tuples is currently in the talk from STL about tuple and C++ 17. And with 17, we get variant, and then there's the whole story of the compile time libraries, which are now really advanced, and compile time template metaprogramming, Boost HANA, etc. Those libraries are able to generate and build in seconds what has taken minutes previously. And then I already mentioned that static polymorphism gets more important, and the whole variant story is connected to that, and will go into pattern matching probably. And then, as Bjarne already mentioned, unfortunately, we get modules and concepts not with the next standard, but with the standard and hopefully C++ 20, maybe 19 if they hurry up. This is the conclusion of the whole talk. And so I will take some questions.
Given your current experiences, if you had to go back and make the choices again, would you do the same technologies? Would you make it in another way?
Would I do the same choices again? Would I use the same technologies? Yes. There's little code which I've written which I had to change or refactor. That's the reason why it's missing, is the serialization code. which is a bit complicated, but I had my own method there, and then I found out it's a better way to, there's a better way to use boost serialization, and that would be the only thing. Qt itself as a library for building a front end, for building a GUI, is still, I think, the best solution, that what I know. So, yeah, I would. Yes?
Did you consider using a boost property tree for JSON parsing?
Did I consider using boost property tree for JSON parsing? No, because I know that boost property tree is not a fully supportive JSON implementation. And if you, it's actually also in the benchmark part of that, and he writes like it's, yeah. And also it's actually known in the Boost community. It's a big mistake by a lot of people to use property tree as a JSON parser, because it supports only a subset what it itself needs from JSON, but it's not meant to be a JSON library. It's not meant to be Boost JSON. It's meant to be a property tree library. So I haven't used it for that. Any more questions? Okay. Thank you.